Hello and welcome to this episode of the Lehigh Valley with Love podcast. We are spotlighting the Society of the Arts Cocktails with the Authors on Wednesday, October 15th at the Allentown Art Museum, and Luncheon with the Authors on Thursday, October 16th at the Renaissance Allentown Hotel. What's this all about? Well, these events bring together three nationally acclaimed writers to Allentown to share remarks, participate in panel discussions, and sign books for attendees. And proceeds benefit the Allentown Art Museum's educational programs, the SOTA Print Fund, and the SOTA Education Endowment. And all of this information can be found at SOTAPA.org. You're going to be able to find out more about the authors, the events, and all the information you need. And I am so glad to be joined with these three authors, including Adriana Allegri, debut author of Sunflower House, a meticulously researched debut historical novel that uncovers the notorious Lebensborn program of Nazi Germany, Allison Galen, Edgar and Seamus award-winning author of We Are Watching. Her work has been published in the US, UK, France, Belgium, and the Netherlands, Japan, Germany, all over the world, and she has been nominated for numerous other awards. And Jason Rakulik, the New York Times best-selling author and winner of a Goodreads Choice Award and author of The Last One at the Wedding. Thank you all for joining me today. How are we doing?
Good, good.
Great. Really good.
Be here.
Our pleasure.
So, before I jump in, I'm going to ask you each some specific questions, but I want to talk a little bit about these events themselves. You know, what do you, as an author, most enjoy about coming out and meeting readers at some of these events? Adriana, I'll start with you.
Sure. This is my first book, so I'm new to so much of this, but I love meeting. I know it's cool. I love meeting with readers, and it's always been a joy for me to see how they interpret the themes of the book, to see how they see the characters. Questions often surprise me and make me realize something about my own writing process that I never knew. While I was writing the book, of course, the characters seemed really interesting and real to me, but it's always cool to get them from the reader's perspective, so that when a character becomes real for the reader, then that's enormously exciting. But it's all new for me. It's just real exciting.
And Allison, I'm sure you've been to one or two of these before. You know, what's it like for you?
I love it. I just by nature, being an author is so reclusive, and especially during the process of writing, you feel like you're sort of tossing opinions out there and not getting any response, because it is a very solitary profession. So when I go to these events or conferences or panel discussions, it's always just enlightening and eye-opening to hear people's reactions to what I've written, sort of as Adriana was saying.
Sure. And Jason, what do you get? You know, what is the feeling of interacting with fans and readers?
I mean, they both just said it so well. I mean, that's what it is. You work on these things in solitude and isolation for so long, and then you actually get to see how people respond to it. So it's a really cool thing.
It was neat. In reading up, I unfortunately wasn't able to read everybody's book in time, but reading up on everybody and it's so fun. Like, you guys have Reddit discussions about you and things like that. It's really interesting. I know, right? It's a little scary, but it must be neat to, like, you know, you're spending so much time in whatever isolation when you're writing, to be able to get those responses from people must just be such a unique experience.
Yeah, I mean, what I found...
Go ahead, Jason.
Oh, it's... You never know what's going to upset somebody.
Did you see the one with the author of I can't remember Game of Thrones? Somebody just yelled at him. He's like, you're going to be dead before you finish these books. It's like, give the guy a break. He's writing them.
He's writing as fast as he can.
Right. And then again, the other thing about these is that we are raising money. You know, the events themselves are raising money for education in the arts. That must be a little bit of a nice bonus as well, I would imagine, to support that. Can you talk a little bit about that, Allison, maybe?
Oh, absolutely. I think education in the arts is so important. And it's sometimes arts education is being ignored in favor of, more science and technical type studies. But I know I was an arts major in college, and learning about the arts in general, to me, growing up was often a lifesaver. And same with my daughter. She's a very creative person. She has an arts degree as well. And I just think it's so important to open up that creative side of the brains of young people. If that makes, that sounds a little bit
wrong,
brains, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Adriana, I guess talk about the importance of, being a part of events that give back, I guess.
Sure. I totally agree with Allison. And also I think art is like a preservation of culture and history, and a reminder that we can't forget what has happened in the past. So it informs the present and it informs the future. And then also just on a personal level, I'm first generation American. There was not a lot of money growing up. My parents were immigrants. They came over from Italy, but there was always art, music, books. They didn't have an education. They made sure I got mine, but there were thousands of books in the house. And then we went to museums all the time. So it was always this focus on culture, enrich your mind, learn something new. So I think it's amazing that I get to participate in this event, because it's just really important.
Hey, Jason, how do you feel about, obviously coming to an event that's raising money to give back to the arts?
Yeah, it's fabulous. I mean, this apparels of going third. Those two answers were so great. I mean, it's just tremendously important. I forget who said this. There's a great quote: stories are tools for living. That we use stories to understand the world and understand other people and build empathy with other people. And I think stories, so it's just so important,
And I feel too. Events where we're coming back together. I mean, 2020 seems like so long ago. It was. I mean, it's 5 years ago now. But just being able to come together and talk about, stories and to give feedback on things. While we're doing this over technology, there is something to be said for coming in person and really connecting is so much different. You can't get the same thing. Okay, I want to jump into it. I have a couple questions for each of you I'm going to go through. So, Adriana, I hope you don't mind. As the newest author in the group, we're going to start with you, if that's okay. I recently read a Q&A where you mentioned that the idea for the Sunflower House started with vivid dreams more than 20 years ago. Can you kind of talk about that and the genesis of the book?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's making me talk about my process a little bit, which is good because for a long time, I felt real nervous about my process. A lot of what I do comes from the subconscious, but I was a high school teacher on summer break. And usually in the summer, we would do another job, right? To make a little bit of extra money. That year, that didn't happen. So I was experimenting with short stories, X-Files, fan fiction, that kind of thing. Anyway, I woke up crying on two separate occasions with Katrine's voice in my head, who is the narrator of the prologue and the epilogue of the book. But at first I thought those two things were short stories. I had no idea that they were a novel until, and then I'm like, holy crap, this is a novel. What am I going to do? Because I had never really considered writing a full novel. And they dealt with the issue of secrets, a mother-daughter relationship that was in need of healing, and a box with a swastika. And all of these secrets between them. And that actually became a major theme of the book, Family Secrets, because Alina, who's actually the main character of the book, had secrets kept from her. And then when she had her daughter, she kept secrets from her daughter. And there are secrets in different ways throughout the book. So that was a theme, and it came probably from the subconscious. It wasn't deliberate, but that's how it turned out. And as it turns out, there are secrets in my family that no one has revealed. My mother's name is Germana. Her father, my nonno Pietro, who I never met, died before I was born. Italy was obviously allied with the wrong side during World War II. All I know is that he worked in a factory in Germany during World War II. No one ever spoke of it. He died well before I was born. So I am sure that type of secret is what kind of informed the process.
Right. And I've said this a couple of times now. We said meticulously researched. That came up a few times. So can you talk a little bit about that? You're doing historical research as you're writing. Were there any difficulties there? or how did that come about?
There was a lot of difficulty, particularly with this topic, which is the Lebensborn program, because Lebensborn program, because Himmler ordered that all of the records be destroyed when he knew that all was lost and that the war they were going to lose. So most of the records were destroyed. I pieced together what happened in this novel from what remained, which meant going to the Holocaust Museum in DC and spending time there and with books there. The most difficult thing, though, that I had to deal with was how these babies were treated. We're talking about baby factories in Nazi Germany that were designed to create the master race. So even though I have always loathed Hitler and Mussolini and fascism and Nazism, still I was very naive. I thought surely they would take care of these children. Right. They're breeding them out, but no, because in any philosophy that's devoid of any humanity, children aren't really children. They're just building blocks. So that was, it was very difficult to research, like on an emotional level, obviously. Right. And then I also wanted to make sure that anything I found in one book was corroborated by at least another source so that I was fairly sure it was true. And then to keep the story moving and to make it a hopeful book, because in the end, it's hopeful. It's about resistance. I decided that I wouldn't include everything. I wouldn't include every story I had found because I mean, from a selfish perspective, I wanted the reader to keep reading and get to the hope part. If you lay it down so much with these horrible details, then it's easy to sink into despair, right? For both writer.
So and I'm sure those are hard decisions to make.
Like, they are. And they went back and forth. But so to keep the story moving forward, what happened is there are three pivotal scenes, all dealing with how these children were treated. And that builds the case for Alina's resistance and for her trying to save the children. But that was the most difficult part because they're children.
Yeah. The amount of work that goes in before you even put pen to paper. It's malice. It's easy to think about it. And Allison, I want to talk to you. I read a recent roundtable. Your book was described as a thriller about grief colliding with conspiracy theories. What made you want to explore how dangerous online groups can spill into real life?
Well, I think the idea sort of came to me during the pandemic, when how everybody was so isolated, but still relating to each other online and, you know, how quickly things started to happen. That said, what I like to do, what I've always liked to do is I write about the things that scare me the most. And in recent years, what scares me the most have been large groups of people who are misinformed. Actually terrifying to me. So I was thinking about it. I did a lot of research on conspiracy theories, conspiracy theorists, and how they really, I mean, they've always been around. There have always been, conspiracy theories, urban legends, etc. But these things pick up speed and also a form of believability online when you see things in print and when you see lots of other people with the same opinion as you. So what really kind of sparked the interest in the idea for the book was I thought, well, usually when there are these conspiracy theorists, the focuses of them are well-known people, celebrities, people with who by nature have security details and, have some removal from the world. I thought, what if a basically normal family became at the center of a conspiracy theory? So that, kind of sparked my interest. And it's also sort of possible for it to happen because my husband, Mike Galen, he wrote a screenplay and which was a movie that came out in 1994 called No Escape. It's kind of developed a cult following since then. It starred Ray Liotta. It came out and it was about
movie. Yeah, they're like he's a prisoner and he meets. I know that movie. I've seen that in the last year. I haven't. That's so crazy. What?
Yes. So strangely enough, this movie it takes place in 2022. It deals with the commercialization of prisons, which hadn't happened back then, but it's since happened. It also has a pivotal scene, army scene that takes place in Benghazi. All this stuff my husband had written before Benghazi. Happened before 2022 happened, which I weirdly enough was the year Ray Liotta died, all kinds of stuff. So my husband started sort of getting messages from people who thought, I don't know, maybe he's psychic or something. I don't, because, you know.
Should have ran with it. He's like, yes, I went back.
So, so that kind of informed the book too, that it is very possible for people you don't know to develop opinions on you and feelings about you and attribute a power to you that you really don't have. And it's very easy for that to cross the line into being something dangerous and terrifying. And again, I like to write about things that scare me. So that really was what inspired the idea. Well, I'm glad you like the movie.
No, it blows my mind a little bit because I have to go back and watch it. But no, that's so interesting. You have won, you know, the Edgar and Seamus Awards. Looking back, you know, what lessons have you learned? I mean, I know that you were not writing necessarily to get an award. That's not the goal when you're writing. But when you get something like that, is there anything you kind of learn from it, or?
Yes. Well, it's interesting because I was nominated for the Edgar, I think, three times before I actually won the Edgar. So one thing I learned was to not expect to win and to put on my happy loser face, which I'm very familiar with at this point. But just in terms of writing the books that kind of connect with people in the genre that I write in, the genre is by its nature a little bit over the top. You know, you're trying you're writing a thriller, you're trying to scare people. So in order to make it a visceral experience, in order to help the reader, you know, get involved and believe the story you're telling, the most important thing, in my opinion, is to create believable characters, characters with flaws, characters with real relationships, characters with some depth that are not, you know, like cartoonish characters. That way the reader can get emotionally involved in the story. And I feel like with the books of mine that have actually won these awards, that's been true. They've been, you know, the relationships between the characters have been very complicated, and the characters themselves I've tried to make very imperfect. You know, they always tell you, you know, create likable characters. To me, I think a lot of people maybe don't like my characters, but create likable characters. Right. To me, that means create compelling characters. And the only character that only thing that makes a character unlikable to me is if they're perfect, if they're flawless. So that's sort of what I think I've learned. Like, I feel like my most successful books have had the sort of deepest and most real characters.
So I'm going to follow that up with, I just read a book that was like the opposite of that character. I read a Jack Reacher book. They're so fun. But I'm reading it, I'm like, this guy's ridiculous. Like, none of this is.
But he's such a fun read.
Yeah.
And he's, I don't know. I don't consider him like a cartoonish character. He's just like, another thing to make a character likable is to make them really, really good at what they do. And Jack Reacher defines that. Yeah. He's really good at what he does. So, you know, if you're talking about him or James Bond or somebody like that, then just literally forget everything I've said.
Jason, you've been so patient. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. In an interview you had with Wicked Horror, you talked about like the structure of Deliverance and putting a big turn right at the midpoint. Could you just kind of talk a little bit about your approach to writing and suspense and what really gets you excited?
Sure. Yeah, I'm surprised you seized on that because most people don't remember Deliverance, but I like books that have structure. Like, a book doesn't have to have an interesting structure, but I think I'm drawn to books that do have like unusual structures. Like, I love, anytime a book is set in like 24 hours, I'm always like drawn to that for some reason. And Deliverance has this great structure. Even if you haven't read the book, a lot of people know the movie because it's about this canoe trip that goes sideways. And it's a 3-day canoe trip. So there's a section before the trip. Then it's like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then there's a section after the trip. And so it's got like this sort of five-part, five-act structure to it that this is totally writer geeking out stuff. But I just love that structure of that book. I think it works so well. And the most horrible thing in the book happens right in the middle. Like, you can actually open the book to its exact center, and that's where scene that everybody knows is.
Yeah, yep.
And so as I started writing this book that you know, on the surface sounds like a domestic suspense novel about a dad going to his daughter's wedding. I thought, well, wouldn't it be really fun if I just use the same structure as Deliverance, you know? So, I mean, nobody picks up on it, but I even wanted to have the exact same like section titles that Deliverance had. My editor's like, no one is going to remember what you're talking about. Right. You know, you have your own section titles. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, it's satisfying to me. I just like that the book has like a sort of structure. And what I tried to do also that Deliverance does really well is Deliverance sort of invites the reader on this adventure as well. Like when you start reading the book, you kind of feel like you're with these four people going down the river in these two canoes, and you're part of it and you're experiencing things as they do. And that's what I wanted my book to feel like. You know, there's no flashbacks. It's all just like moving forward in a very linear way. I wanted you to feel like you were going to this wedding too and encountering all the strange characters along with my narrator and just trying to make sense of, you know, what the hell's going on.
Right. And it's so interesting. And you also have a publishing background, which is I want to talk a little bit about that because it kind of is allows you to think about books and have more of a maybe an insider perspective than somebody who maybe hasn't had that experience. Can you talk a little bit about that? How does it influence you? Does it influence you in your writing at all? Or
yeah, I mean, it does. I mean, it's funny. It's funny that you use the word insider perspective because it's also kind of like in a way, it's kind of an outsider perspective. I think a lot of writers approach the work from the inside out. You know, they begin with this thing and they start writing it and they're building it. And they're never stopping to think about when it gets out in the world, how are others going to like see it? And how do you, you know? And that is one thing that working in publishing teaches you pretty quickly. Like you learn how to sell a lot of books and you learn how to talk about books. And you learn about how like, pitches work and how to get booksellers excited about something. So, you know, I'm in a situation where like, I'm always sort of cognizant of like, what am I trying to make this, you know, and how am I going to get people interested in it? So, you know, an example would be like one thing I do early on is before I get too deep in a book, I sort of write like the jacket copy for what I think, you know, what the book is promising, you know, one of my pet peeves is jacket copy that gives away the whole book, you know?
Well, sure. Yeah. It's like a trailer that you watch the movie. Right. It's like, why don't I even see it?
It drives me crazy. I have so many books where like, I'm reading the book and I'm more than halfway through and I have not caught up to what the jacket copy has already told me. So I'm always trying to write books that could have really compelling jacket copy, but maybe the jacket copy doesn't get you more than like 40 or 50 pages into the story before like things start changing and surprising you. Because I know the readers looked at the jacket copy. We all, you know, read the Amazon description before we buy the book online or check it out at the library. So.
Yeah. And then kind of to everybody here, what is something that you're maybe looking forward to the most upcoming at these events? You have two different opportunities to interact with people, probably more than that, right? But the specific ones, the luncheon with authors and cocktails with authors, it's kind of like a more relaxed setting, I would imagine. What do you look forward to at these events? And Adriana, what do you, I guess, hope to look forward to?
Oh, definitely meeting readers, getting to talk about the book with readers, you know, meeting them, finding out what they think about the book, but also meeting with other authors and being able to hear your stories, Jason's story, Allison's story, because Allison, I think you said at the beginning that it is a very solitary thing as a writer. So it's great to meet with other writers and talk about the craft and talk about.
Yeah. I guess you don't think about that. It's not like you guys are all hanging out at the same coffee shop. No. You know, it's like you all probably don't get to get together often either. So I would imagine trading ideas and stuff must be interesting.
No, it's great because you get to talk. You have problems that nobody else understands, like whatever your work problems are, you know, like none of your neighbors have this, you know, so you have to meet another writer to say, you know, does your editor ever do this? You know, and they're the only people who understand it.
And before I let you go, I just thought of this because I'm curious. We talked about Jack Reacher. Who are you guys reading currently? I want to get, can you give me an author maybe I should check out?
Well,
Allison, go ahead.
I'm currently reading El Dorado Road by Megan Abbott. She's a friend, but she's also a tremendous author. I've read all of her books. El Dorado Drive. Why did I say road? El Dorado Drive. And it's a new book, and it is a suspenseful book, and it's about women, and it's about money, and it's about all sorts of compelling and scary things.
Jason?
I just finished a book, and I'm embarrassed. I can't remember the author's name, but I just finished it last week. And I was reading it on vacation, and one, two, three other people in my family also read it. Like, it was the book that was getting passed around because it was pretty short and pretty quick. Mm-hmm. It's a nonfiction book called Our Marriage at Sea. It was about a true story. There was a couple in 1971. They were going to sail around the world, husband and wife, and their boat, a whale breached under their boat, just out of the blue. They're in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. A whale comes up, pokes a hole in their boat. They end up on a life raft. This happened in like 1972. So like I was like barely alive. So I don't remember hearing about people, but they survived on a life raft for 117 days. And what's neat about the book is that it's not like a traditional survival story. It's talking more about what is it about their relationship, this husband and wife, how did they, I mean, you know, how do you get through anything with like your spouse, you know?
Right.
What I mean?
Not shipwreck, but let alone lost at sea.
Now there are two personalities, you know, in extremely close quarters. All you're doing is looking at this person for 117 days and you have nothing else around you except this expanse of sea. And like, what was it about the relationship and the marriage that allowed them both to survive this? I thought it was fascinating. Really, really interesting book. Awesome. Really,
I'll look at it.
A neat take on that kind of survival story.
All right. And Adriana, do you have one?
Sure. Well, actually, I read a lot of historical fiction. So two authors, Madeline Martin, as well as Bryn Turnbull. A lot of their books take place during World War II. Next up for me is a book by Shelley Sanders called The Night Sparrow. And it's about female sharpshooters during World War II. I have not started it yet, but it's next up. And I'm really excited because I love her work. Shelley's incredible.
You guys have like... all the stuff that you're talking about is so exciting, like the subjects and everything. I'm genuinely interested in picking up all your books and taking a look. Like it's really is, and reading and researching and just all the thriller stuff. I love it. It's fun. So we're looking forward to having you guys in Allentown. We're so happy. I mean, where are you guys in the world? I should have started that when I asked. But Adriana, where are you at?
I'm in Arizona right now.
Oh my goodness.
Lived in New Jersey. Now Arizona. Okay.
I'm in Woodstock, New York.
I'm in Philadelphia, so I think I might have the shortest commute to the festival.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. No, and we're looking forward to it. It's so great. You know, downtown Allentown's doing wonderful. We're always a big fan of the Allentown Art Museum and, of course, the Society of the Arts. So, Adriana, Allison, and Jason, thank you so much for spending some time with us. This is just a little bit of taste of some of the amazing, you know, conversations and more that you can find at the Luncheon with the Authors and Cocktail with the Authors. To get more information for both of these events, please visit SOTAPA.org. We have all the links in our show notes. Thank you to our sponsors, and thank you to these amazing authors for taking some time out to speak with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
A big thank you to our sponsors, Michael Bernadin with Remax Real Estate, Molly's Irish Grill and Sports Pub, Benko Beverage Company, Wind Creek Event Center, WDIY 88.1 FM. Thank you for allowing us to continue to bring these episodes to you.